We are Two Guys Gaming.
Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. I'm Sean, noob of all trades, from Two Generations Gaming. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. In this series, we are reading through Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. I apologize, this should have come out last Thursday, and then I was going to release it this weekend, but it was crazy busy this weekend. We had Little League, we had prom, I had two soccer games that I had to go to, but soccer is over and done with pretty much this week and next week, so I should be able to get three episodes out this week and probably only two next week because my oldest son is graduating from high school and my mother is visiting, so I'll probably only get two episodes out then, maybe Monday, maybe Wednesday, we'll see. In either case, in this episode, I'm doing chapter 17, chapter 18, and chapter 19. Which start level 2, quote-unquote, in the book. And there's a quote at the beginning of level 2. It says, "I'm not crazy about reality, but it's still the only place to get a decent meal." And that's supposedly by Groucho Marx. In the movie, parenthetically, get used to that phrase. While I intend to do a movie versus book episode to end the series, I also intend to drop that phase periodically to remind myself of possible angles. And that's quite the parenthetical. They use that sentiment, but attribute it to Halliday. Well, his avatar. Parenthetically, consciousness uploaded to Oasis? I don't know if they ever made that clear or not. It moves me even more knowing that Groucho said it. Comedy and tragedy indeed. Chapter 17. The first part of this chapter reads like a chat log between Wade and Artemis. It starts with them both agreeing that chatting is a bad idea. But they continue chatting. She scoffs at the idea of meeting in a chat room because of her tendency to ramble. He sneaks in a compliment by calling her quote-unquote enchanting. She deflects. They talk some about their fame and how it manifests. Apparently Saturday Night Live still exists and still punches down on occasion. They tease their real-life personas. He confesses to having a crush on her. She deflects. He insists. She cautions him because he knows nothing about the real her. He makes the claim that the Oasis reveals all. She counters that the Oasis only shows what the users want to show. Not that it was a huge get or anything, but I think I'm going to take a victory lap anyway this week, based on that. At least I'll pat myself on the back. Pat. They again agree that they have no time for love because of the Jade Key. Nevertheless, they continue to chat with a question-for-question session. In the interest of disclosure, I wrote that as Q4Q. They alternate asking each other questions. In case you didn't understand what question-for-question meant, we learn that she's in college studying poetry and creative writing. At every inquiry, she insists that she is, in fact, female. Her parents also died, but of the flu. She lives in the Pacific Northwest. The chat ends with her reiterating that continued contact is a bad idea. He asks to email her. Not a good idea, she says. So, of course, he emails her. And yes, I got that uneasy feeling again. She said no. He insisted. She responded, though. The emails got more personal. They started meeting in chat rooms. He falls hard. She seems to reciprocate at least some of his feelings. But all of it started with him deliberately going against her wishes. I will address that later. During their little back and forth, he graduates high school with little fanfare. That gives him more time to play in the Oasis and level up to max level at 99. It takes less time than he expects. With more time and no reason to log out, he power levels and collects a cache of goodies to go with his new power. While on his various quests, he continues to work away at the Quatrain. The first two lines lead him first to some old Japanese TV show, dubbed and brought to America in the 80s, called The Space Giants. Though he binges the whole series, nothing connects. Then, randomly, while watching an old Cap'n Crunch commercial, his brain makes a connection between lines 1 and 3. The captain conceals the key, but you can only blow the whistle. He thinks it refers to one of the first phone hackers, a guy who used a whistle to spoof free long distance. The whistle came as a prize in Cap'n Crunch, and that became the guy's moniker. But again, he gets stuck there. No clue on the dwelling. He also had the pleasure of getting to hang out with Artemis. And why not? Nobody else happened to be making any progress either. They hung out more. He bears his soul to her, but she keeps him at a distance, refusing to give him any information about herself. And to his credit, I don't get the sense that he believes that she owes him anything. He just wants to be with her as much as he can. This inhibits his time with H. H takes no offense even when Wade breaks plans to hang with Artemis. All H says is typical of a friend, quote-unquote, I hope you know what you're doing. He admits that he has no clue. Gradually he comes to the realization that he replaced one obsession, parenthetically the egg, with another, parenthetically Artemis. They go on quote-unquote dates. He realizes that this is a bad idea because it exposes him to the potential for IOI to find him, but he doesn't care. A fool in love. One particular date gets mentioned, and I found it actually charming. They quote-unquote star in a Rocky Horror Picture Show fan event as Columbia and Eddie. After the show, she kisses him for the first time. He blows by warning bells and confesses love to her, in spite of how dumb it might be. Indeed, a fool in love. Chapter 18. As I read this chapter, I started to realize it happens in the movie too. I told you that movie versus episode is coming, but I now feel like Leo in the meme pointing at the TV anytime this happens. Maybe we could turn it into a game. Wade receives an invitation to Ogden Morrow's birthday party. Artemis also received the invite. It figures so did H and Dido and Shoto. H competes in a death match on that night, and Dido and Shoto refuse to enter PvP unless absolutely necessary. The party takes place at Ogden's dance club on some cyberpunk planet called Neo Noir. The club is located at the intersection of the Avenue and the Boulevard, two streets that stretched along the equator and prime meridian of the planet. The club itself looked like a 3-kilometer cobalt sphere suspended 30 meters off the ground. Wade shows up in his conglomeration kit, Ecto-1, Back to the Future DeLorean that he raced in the movie, parenthetically. Whatever you do for the game, do it now. Rather than take the chance that the thing gets stolen or blown up, he casts a shrink spell on it to put it in his pocket and take with him. You walk along the inside of the sphere. Gravity pulls towards the surface. The dance floor exists in the anti-gravity bubble surrounding the center of the sphere. When Wade arrives, DJR2D2 spins Star Wars-themed remixes of Blue Monday and Union of the Snake. While he searches for Artemis, he orders a pan-galactic gargle blaster. And now I'm YouTubing Blue Monday because 80s pop culture, even with the warts, or how we fight off all of the evil Ronald Reagan in different hats that have popped up over the history of this country. Artemis finds him. She orders a drink. Warm-up DJ R2-D2 beams out, and the star of the show, Ogden Morrow, takes over. He drops Rebel Yell on the house. Artemis rushes to dance. Wade hesitates, but gives in and joins her. They dance, using the Oasis to either dance better or morph their bodies to allow for better dancing, or both. Morrow follows with time after time, and all hell breaks loose. During their dance, Wade professes love. Artemis again tells him that can't be possible. He doesn't know her. He protests. She reiterates that not everyone is like him, parenthetically my words, and only let into the Oasis what they want there. Eventually, they get to the part where she lashes out and says he doesn't even know what true love is. She steers the conversation back to the contest and vows not to talk to him again until it's over. He loses his shit. Morrow transitions to another dance track, and they descend further into hell. An explosion rocks the place. Sixers flood in. Soon it becomes apparent that Wade and Artemis are their targets. They fight them off until Ogden's avatar comes out of the DJ booth. He summons a great deal of energy and releases a torrent of lightning that incinerates the Sixers. Those left in the building, after the attack, erupt in celebration and go back to dancing. Wade looks around for Artemis, but she's gone. She goes into the hole busted open by the Sixers, looks back at Wade for a moment, then leaves. Chapter 19. We get a glimpse into the new and not-so-improved Wade. Since the Artemis incident at the club, he gets the big sad. Hey, men fall harder and quicker, and they take it worse when things don't work out. This chapter starts with him waking up. True to his word, he tunes out of all contact with the real world. He saw a window in his apartment, and he wanted to paint it black. It was terrible, I apologize for that, but I really had to throw that in there. Unable to soundproof the place any better, he still gets the ambient noise of a major metropolitan area in the background. I guess that's what ambient means. Can you tell I'm a little out of practice here? It's been a week. He armor plates the door and only shops online with contactless delivery. Hey, it's like COVID, but this was written like 10 years before COVID. It's pretty funny. He tells us about his new Oasis machine, custom built, continually upgraded, parenthetically, sometimes with proprietary test parts, it becomes of life. Hell, he even buys a fuck doll for the thing, but quickly realizes what younger and funnier Dennis Miller said. When a guy can sit on his couch and fuck Claudia Schiffer for 1995, it's gonna make crack look like Sanka, right? He ditches the doll. Parenthetically, there's quite the soliloquy about masturbation. I'll leave that part out. And signs up for an exercise program, because sometimes depressed people eat themselves to death. He must run the program before logging in, and he keeps track of his vitals to make adjustments if necessary. He gives his oasis some personality in the form of Max. I guess that most likely is a variation of Max Headroom before the synthetic stutter appeared on the stage. After he takes care of the usual morning business, he does his morning workout. Then, and only then, the program allows him to sign in to the only world he now knows. Greetings, Percival, it says. Speak your passphrase. And now for my reaction. I will get to the discussion theme in a little bit. As I've done with the most recent episodes, since finding this format that works, I have some minor ideas and themes to cover before talking about that. I will say that while reading, I came with four ideas. Identity, online versus in real life, capitalism, and hating what you once loved. Keep those in mind as you listen. First, of course, I need to quote-unquote, me too, with Wade. My wife and I met online. During the early history of the internet, there used to be chat rooms. I frequented several of them with silly names like Crossroads and later Moo Moo Land. They built them, parenthetically, not on rock and roll, but on the same code as early text slash ASCII games like Muds and Mushes. If none of that makes sense, those are simply code bases in which you could build a variety of text-based games, and also, it turns out, chat rooms. Like I tell my kids, the 90s were wild. Well, we met in Crossroads. I just looked it up on the Google machine and I can't find any trace of it out there. I will continue to look and give updates if I find any. So, when they talked about Wade's and Artemis's brief fling, it brought back memories. We, too, started with chatting. Then moved on to email and snail mail for more sensitive topics. Back in an age where you still paid for long distance, I worked an entire summer to pay off a $1,500 phone bill that we accrued by talking, parenthetically and sometimes not, for hours. We never suffered the big dramatic fight that ended in the two of us going our separate ways. Sure, we went through it and still do sometimes. But I started this all with, quote-unquote, my wife, so we more or less pulled, quote-unquote, happily ever after out of the whole situation. And we have a, quote-unquote, meet-cute worthy of Hollywood. Hey, maybe that needs to be my next project. Second, I see a little more of the, quote-unquote, females as prizes for the male protagonist complaint emerging in this section. Wade ignores all of Artemis's requests to stop communicating, but to Klein's credit, it does blow up in his face. I'm not sure how to think about this. On one hand, we have the concept of, quote-unquote, playing hard to get. I don't even know if that's what's happening here. I think Artemis is genuinely interested, but also fears the worst if they pursue something. Caught between a rock and a hard place, she decides to go with her quote-unquote heart over her quote-unquote head. Who among us hasn't done that? I guess as with most things in the complex realms of humans and relationships, there's no easy answer. Communicate with each other and respect each other's decisions and boundaries. That's the only advice I have. So, while I see how others might interpret Wade's actions as disrespectful, and sympathize with those who do, I personally don't have a problem with them. When it came time, Artemis tells Wade to cut the shit and ends all communication. As often happens, I'm left wondering, am I on the right side? Do I need to check my bias and try harder to see things through the lives of others? The answer to those questions are almost always yes, so I continue to try to be better. Yes, I said that we should respect each other's decisions and boundaries, and yes, I said that Wade went against Artemis's decisions and boundaries, but also, you know, Artemis did finally give him a chance and then things blew up. So things are messy. It's complicated. Like I say, I don't know what to say other than I sympathize with what people say about the book, but I just don't see that it's a huge issue at this point. Call that what you will. That's usually where I end up with these things. Now that I said all that, this transition might feel awkward, but I have a half-baked idea, and I want to get that out there into the hive mind. I don't know how or why I got this idea. Also, I'm probably way off base with it, but it fits in with the theme of the show, so here goes nothing. I think that, like me, Klein is earnest in his desire to help and make things better. Sure, our attempts are clumsy, but we're new and learning. And yes, I understand that it is not the job of the oppressed to make goofy white guys like us feel comfortable and or educate us, especially when people who look like us are the reasons for their oppression. All I ask is that you be patient. And if you have no patience left, maybe we meet again under better circumstances. What does any of this mean in the context of the current discussion? All part of this awkward transition, dear listeners. I think that Klein took his ideas about female empowerment and channeled them into Artemis. Yes, it's clumsy, but he's trying. You are under no obligation to accept him or his ideas. But right now, I still give him a pass. Yeah, I get it. I'm a white guy. Of course I side with the other white guy oppressor. But I remember what somebody once said. I know the difference between an awkward ally and a bigot. Well, we awkward allies appreciate that. And so, with all of that, I finally arrive at the quote-unquote big theme part of the discussion. While reading, I jotted down a few ideas. I already mentioned them, but here they are again in case you forgot. Identity, online versus in real life, capitalism, and hating what you loved. Three out of the four apply here. I hope that I get another chance to talk about capitalism. Last episode set me up so well, but I got a bug in me about spoilers, so I went there. I think Klein will give me another chance. If not, there's always the finale. I thought I wanted to talk about identity. I still think that will work. Artemis and Wade both talked a lot about it in the chapters. It sticks in my brain. I'll probably talk a little bit about online versus in real life, since I exist in that subset who lived part of a lifetime offline, then transitioned to the in-between, and then crafted an identity online, contains some parts of me, but also exists independent of me in some ways. I will save the big quote-unquote online versus in real life talk for another episode. But identity, that's a big one. And I honestly feel like Klein put a lot of his identity in Artemis. See, sometimes it takes a while, but I always get around to making those connections. I grew up in a small town, though that definition is absolutely relative, with my father, my mother, and two younger brothers. My father hit us. I think I've mentioned that. It was the time, as they say. Hell, my teachers in middle school hit us. My elementary school principal laid hands on us. Relax, I promise this isn't leading to a therapy session. I'm just laying the foundation for the discussion of identity. Our parents hit us, so when we had kids, we were going to hit them. Hey, we turned out fine. Then again, recent history shows that simply is not true. Why mention that here? Well, that was a big part of my identity before kids. When somebody pushed back, I used the standard, quote-unquote, there's a difference between hitting your kids and abusing your kids. I felt absolute in my right to hit my children. Then I had kids. I did hit them, until I didn't. The way that I explain it is that I came to the realization that I had all of the power in the relationship already. I didn't need to take any more power from this child. Plus, a child's love is unconditional. It's heartbreaking to have them still hug you after you just hit them. It doesn't hurt me more than it hurts you necessarily, but it does hurt you both. Why hurt either of you? You don't have to hurt to grow and change. Okay, big hero, you don't hit your kids. Look, I'm not looking for accolades here. I just want to show that we all cling so much to our identity, but if you let it, it fundamentally changes. Shed that skin. So while I find myself disagreeing when someone like Artemis argues that online space is fictional, I need to admit that they're not all wrong. Neither is Wade, though, when he says that it's all personality. Come on now, you knew I'd fall somewhere in the middle. Gather around, kids. Let me tell you about the history of the internet. Once upon a time, you could be whoever you wanted. In those chat rooms I mentioned, you chose a username. Sometimes it played on your real name. A girl I talked to at the time, named Amy, went with Aimless. I chose Dragonclaw. Parenthetically, when I got to Xbox name tags, I lost out and had to change it to Wapnagard. And I roleplayed a bit as my D&D mage's Black Panther familiar. I never went full furry. Parenthetically, no judgment, just not my bag. But I lounged in the corner of the virtual space like a big sleepy cat. When approached or drawn into a conversation, I went as Sean. I always strive to be as honest as possible, even when putting things online. I don't post everything, but if you know me online, you know I'm married, I have three teenage kids, I teach, and I am an unabashed nerd. So I'd like to think that when faced with the Oasis, I'd bring a big part of me there. I understand Wade's point of view, that once you strip everything away, all you have is a person's essence. Heck, even with my online identity that I've been crafting for this podcast, I bring so much of myself that I started to warn y'all when I got too personal. So yeah, his words resonate. Simultaneously, I realize that some take the perceived anonymity of the internet and use it to harm others. Let me opine for a minute. I'm a bit slow sometimes, so cut me some slack on this one. But I just realized that social media is like the old joke about alcohol. Why do you drink? Because it amplifies my personality. Yeah, but what if you're an asshole? I get it. It's a Cosby joke. The things he did are reprehensible. I don't want to quote-unquote yeah, but any of that away. So can someone take that relatable comment and give it back to the public domain? The internet in general, parenthetically, and social media in a much more distilled way, make you more of what you are, both good and bad. Again, probably not earth-shattering, but it all just came together for me finally. So no, your racist friend, parenthetically, or aunt or uncle, isn't as virulently racist as their unhinged Facebook post suggests. Likewise, the young mom or dad who posts beautifully lit photos of their sleeping baby want you all to know that's probably the first time that baby slept for longer than 15 minutes in over a week. Look at my baby, they're saying. She cries all the time and drives me nuts, but I still love her so much and I want you to love her too. I don't know why your racist friend chooses to share the racism so much, but I'm thankful for the warning shots. So, in that vein, Artemis makes some good points too. It's just funny how things conspire to come into your life and when. After a decade plus of wandering from school to school, I ended up back at Mahar. I ended up teaching kids that I watched grow up, literally. I will be their advisor for 4 years. I am teaching classes that I want next year. There are other things that I don't want to put out there into the ether, consumed by only about a dozen people at most right now. But you'll probably hear about them soon enough. Now, as I reconcile with all of those feelings and the others that I mentioned that you might have skipped, along comes this book, making me think about childhood and my place in my community, and now the ethereal nature of identity. Well, I don't know if I fully did justice to the theme this time. I think that I planted some good seeds. Let's revisit this one in about a month in the finale. As always, thanks for listening. If you haven't already, you can find us at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles, a link to our socials, including our YouTube, which again I've gotten behind, but I'm planning on getting caught up today and tomorrow with the calendar that I'm doing. I also have a USFL replay page that I started to put together. It's at www.twoguysgaming.net/USFLDR. I will be back on Wednesday of this week, I think, with the next episode. I think Aiden has soccer on Thursday, so I can't do a Thursday. If it's not Wednesday, then it'll definitely be up on Friday. There's only going to be 2 episodes this week. I guess I've only been doing 2 episodes. Maybe I'll try to do 3 this week. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know on Wednesday how things go. Apologies for the awkwardness this time. I was obviously out of practice, and I will be better on Wednesday. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are...